Hello and welcome to the Answer Podcast. My name is Pavel Buzha and I'm joined by Sebastian Kalemba.
Hello everyone, and today we're going to host Pav Grohola, who's FX and Look of Pictures Supervisors at Sony Pictures Imageworks.
It's going to be a great talk. We're going to talk about everything from Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to also his experience in the industry, and it's going to be a big one, so let's jump straight into it. All right, Pavel Grohola, welcome to the... It's Grohola, right? Or Grohola?
Grohola.
Grohola, all right, yeah. All right, my bad.
Nice.
Welcome to the podcast. I was actually... We were talking about this because you use Pav, and I remember I used to spend... I spent 4 years in the States, right, as a kid. And I remember there always had problems with Pavel. Yes. And you go by Pav, which is like a shorter version of it, and it makes total sense to me.
Yeah, that's why, because they have problems with it.
Yeah.
It's like I kind of got sick of, like, although if I go with Pav now, they respond with Pat. And I'm like, no, Pav. And they're like, today I actually had someone say half.
Okay.
Oh. Half? I'm like, no, Pav, P-A-V. Yeah. So I always have to spell it out. So it kind of like, it defeats the purpose. I thought it would be easier, but maybe in some ways not so easy. I should probably just stick with Pavel.
Yeah.
Or Paul.
Or Paul. That's what I would do. Yeah. I would go towards Paul.
Paul. It's too late now, though.
Yeah.
I can't go back.
Yeah.
And
everyone knows me as Pav.
People will get lost.
Yeah.
You will say that they call me Paul. No. Yeah. I was like, what?
And then next month, actually, Pavel, let's just go with Pavel.
Yeah.
Every month.
Then you're lost.
Yeah, exactly.
So we start these episodes, since we're at Promised Land, to kind of give a brief introduction of who you are, a little bit of your background, so people get to know you a little bit.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want me to go for it? Okay, all right, I'll do my whole spiel. So I was born in Poland, but I actually grew up in Australia. Nice. So that's why
I can tell by the accent.
Yeah, I was, got the Aussie accent. So I started to get into visual effects straight after university. I studied fine art, didn't know what to do with myself. Computers were just starting to be a thing. So I thought, oh, computers, I'll get paid to do my work. Because I thought being an artist, I'll be living under a bridge, which I wasn't too into. So I got into computers, started in commercials in Australia, got an opportunity to work in London, went to London, lived there for 6 years, came back to Australia because we had a kid. And then I was like, well, I've always wanted to go to the United States. And then we, after 3 years of being in Australia, I went to the United States and worked there. And I've been there for 12 years now.
So wow.
I've been working in the industry for about over 20 years now.
Incredible.
Which I feel really weird about because I feel like I'm so old now. Like, you know, it suddenly happens where you're like this old senior person. No. It's like I didn't plan for that.
But it's incredible because you have the experience, right? And we were talking about this before we went live, like sharing this experience and actually sharing the knowledge that you accumulated over this time.
Yeah.
We move into like a mental space where we hit a certain age where we just want to like share the knowledge and and pass it on to others so they can learn also from our mistakes or maybe from things that worked for us and all that stuff. But to give a little bit more context into your background, you started with doing adverts, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Ads, commercial work.
Yeah. In Australia.
In Australia.
Yeah.
So I was working in a commercial house for like 3 years just to kind of, so I was doing everything. I was doing like, started like modeling, animation, which I learned I was terrible at, so I didn't want to continue doing that. But I found myself already like at that stage, I was already drawn to things that involve kind of more technical programming type stuff. Mm-hmm. So I knew that that's what interests me. Because like with the kind of work that I do, it's called procedural. Like a lot of the work that I do. So it means that you're setting up systems rather than actually manually doing stuff. And I really liked the systems approach because you can reuse tools and it's like engineering. It's like visual programming almost. Yeah. So I kind of like that somehow appealed to me, even though I kind of had that fine arts background. So like lends itself very well to the career of an effects artist. So an effects artist is basically someone that works more the technical simulation side of 3D animation.
Yeah.
So like you'd be like simulating destruction and water simulations and all that kind of stuff. But you're doing all of that in a piece of software called Houdini, generally. Mm-hmm. It's like the standard.
Yeah.
And Houdini is excellent at doing that kind of work because it's all procedural. But mm-hmm. the other cool thing about Houdini is you can do other cool procedural things with Houdini. So I was very much interested in kind of like using Houdini to explore other like rendering and stylization techniques, which is why Spider-Verse was so cool for me because I got to like explore with doing that on Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
I was totally impressed by Spider-Verse in general. I'm a huge fan. I love it.
Amen.
It's so refreshing. I've been studying the script for like 10 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And I have an obsession over this.
What? Really? That's amazing.
Sebastian's background is animation.
Yeah, I used to be a head of animation at CD Projekt Red, an animation director before. And right now I'm running the project with my huge team, like for over 400 people, the new Witcher. But generally, animation is my passion. So I've been studying Spider-Verse because it was... Actually, you also work on another great movie that I really love, which are The Mitchells.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it because this is what you bring to the industry. You and your team and your co-workers there at Sony, right? It's super like a spark. It's a new thing. It's, you know, it's... this is what, in my opinion, industry needed. Mm-hmm. It was a great kind of... was super refreshing, yeah, because till Spider-Verse, everything seemed to be kind of driven by this very not nuanced R&D. So let's make a great snow. Okay, let's make a great snow. But it wasn't surprising. You know what I mean? Spider-Verse was like, oh my God. And then the second part, when I've seen Hobbs and he's, you know, clothing animated on force, and you know the guitar animated on freeze, I've been scrubbing frames.
That's so cool.
He's
my favorite character.
Oh yeah,
Hobie, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, I love
him. Of course,
yeah, Hobie is so awesome.
Such a good character.
Yeah, exactly. And have you actually also been part of like, let's say, making this texture that are constantly living? On him or the shading,
So like what I helped develop was the line work tool. So all the lines that go on around him, the way that they kind of change and redraw themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. When I was developing the line work tool, like it's not actually difficult to get a line that sticks around an object, right? Mm-hmm. You can procedurally work that out. It's not terribly difficult. But the question is, what do you do with that line when the character is moving and animating? How do you refresh that line? Because you have to refresh it, right? Because if it just sticks to this part and then it moves, it looks wrong. So you have to redraw it. Mm-hmm. So how do you redraw it in a way that looks... not distracting, because if you draw it and suddenly change the line every frame, it's got to pop, 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 pop. Yeah. The line's got to look really like poppy.
Yeah.
So you have to think of a way of like blending out that line and then blending in the new one. So you're constantly blending out, blending in, blending out, blending in. So it's lines are refreshing themselves. And the really surprising thing about that system is that it actually feels nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like it's what artists would do when they're drawing. They're kind of like constantly redrawing and it's not distracting. It just looks, it feels good.
Yeah. It was like, I've been very impressed by it because I remember very old, even Red Bull's adverts. You know, they were like doing, right?
Yes, I know what you mean.
And very, very easy drawings, very flat, very 2D, stylized. But you can tell that it wasn't anything procedural. It was literally an animator that was like, you know, doing this in post.
Yeah,
making sure that the gaps are moving forward and they kind of add to each other to make a fluid feel.
Right.
And kind of I was like, I get this. Yeah, I could manage probably to do it into the... When it comes to Spider-Verse, I was impressed because 3D space, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you move, rotate in every single direction. And I was like, you know, getting crazy. I was going crazy about like, oh my God, how did you manage to do it? That is not distracting.
Dude, that took such a long time to make that. Figure that out.
Yeah,
it took literally like 6 months.
It was a bloody rocket science, man. Yeah. Like honestly, to me, I was like,
it's really hard.
How come?
Like, that's why the impact is so big.
Yeah.
But it's it's like, I think the impact is big because of
visuals.
It's firing on all cylinders.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the visuals, it's the story, it's the voice mm-hmm. acting, absolutely. It's the music, it's mm-hmm. the soundtrack. Absolutely. It's mm-hmm. like Daniel Pemberton,
yeah.
who did the score. Mm-hmm. Fucking genius. Like,
yeah.
Like,
no, man, it's absolute. And even the trailer, you know, it gave me such a promise. And me, as a, you know, part of the audience generally, it was a very promising trailer. That you will deliver some sort of emotions that I was expecting, and you right. deliver it. So also, you know, as you said, firing all cylinders. Even the marketing bit was very right. coherent with
right, mm-hmm.
with building the expectations in the audience, and then you deliver it. Honestly, I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
One more thing on top of the line, as you just said, because I can imagine, and I hope you will elaborate a little bit more, because generally, when you look at the, let's say, sequence, it looks very busy, like mm-hmm. super busy, because, you know, everything moves differently. Then you have the line that is moving constantly and is living. And you can tell, oh, my God, it can't work mm-hmm. because how to then make a sequence so the audience will exactly focus yeah. in the spot that yeah. you want to focus yeah. in such a busy image, and you also manage.
Yeah.
So, like, how come?
Do you know what that is? It's the art direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
the art, we would like get a painting
mm-hmm.
where we would try to match,
mm-hmm.
and then we would have reviews with the art directors okay. and the production designers and the directors, and they would look at that image and they would say, no, it has to be lighter here, okay. reduce the contrast here, increase contrast here. There, each it's almost like every frame is its own piece of art.
Right.
It's super nitpicky.
Yeah.
But for good reason, because it needs to be that nitpicked because they're very specific about what they want you to
yeah.
look at.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would be like what you're saying, it would just be a mess. You'd just be like, oh, yeah. I don't know what to look at.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel very honored to be part of that. And I've learned so much on mm-hmm. like working on these films. Mm-hmm. Like I was just saying that, you know, mm-hmm. I'm getting to an age where I feel like I need to start passing on some of the stuff that mm-hmm. I've learned. I want to write a book and I want to do awesome. all this stuff to kind of like help the, like, spread the information that I've gotten.
Yeah.
And that's why being in festivals like this is so rewarding for me mm-hmm. because I took a lot of time to write that presentation. I took like 6 months of mm-hmm. like thinking about it to really mm-hmm. think about what I wanted to say, because I enjoy looking at things from a top artistic level and like thinking about the theory about why things work mm-hmm. the way they do mm-hmm. and what does it mean from an artistic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's like so rewarding to like share that, because not only am I kind of like trying to it's like writing, right? You kind yeah. of like get the ideas really yeah. straightened mm-hmm. out in your head. Like, mm-hmm. oh, it means this.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. that's what I'm thinking. It's this,
mm-hmm.
and you get it. It's like it's so rewarding. And then to have the opportunity to share that with people about a project that they're interested in, mm-hmm. it's like, wow, what an honor.
Yeah,
I feel like everybody also wants to know what's the secret sauce behind what happened in Spider-Verse, because it's something that redefined how we like consume stuff. Like it's a different type of animation. It's a different yeah. art style than we were used to.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's different. Like the whole puzzle pieces put together create yeah. a different thing compared to what was previously yeah, but in the industry.
Regarding the secret sauce, exactly. Yeah. Like, Puff, like what's your take on it? Because there is a secret sauce that's on it. Like, when I look at your productions, like since Spider-Verse, Mitchell's, right, and the second part, and even, you know, before Cloudy, even Surf's Up, you know, like before, way, you know, like 20 years ago, almost like already. And Hotel Transylvania, right?
Oh, I love that.
There is what I see, and because I have all the art books, I study them. Like, you know, man, I'm a nerd.
So
man.
Cool.
I'm a nerd, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So when I study them, I always notice one thing that is in common kind of nominator. It is that you are smart about picking right battles. It's like, it's not that we're going to focus and do everything at once. It's not. No. This movie is about these three aspects. Like, for example, the Hotel Transylvania. I want to make sure that the poses will look like they are sculpted, but they are moving
right.
and expressive.
Right, right, right.
And I'm like, yeah, we need a tool to let animators to sculpt the pose, to be able to control the very each single frame you, they want.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. And then we have the Spider-Verse, which is like an animated comic book for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and then you have Mitchells, when the camera is all the time there. I had the feeling that, you know, I'm literally like, you know, like National Geographic kind of a vibe. Right. That I'm you know, I'm there. Yeah. Actually, it's a flat, you know, dude, you know, but I'm there. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I love the humor and Cloudy, super fresh concept,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So these things are very creative, and you keep surprise the audience around the world. And I think being very smart about, like, you know, finally making the, you have a budget, right? You have a schedule, right? And you deliver something super outstanding. And I'm like, if you could just tell us maybe and tell people, like, what is the secret sauce at Sony, maybe?
Oh man, I wish I knew. Like, oh, yeah. I wish I could like say, like, sit, as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, there is some, like, and some of those projects were even before my time, mm-hmm. so I don't even know. Like, I didn't even work on those, but I can maybe speak to some of what I'm seeing what's mm-hmm. happening on Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big things that I've noticed working on a film like Spider-Verse versus other projects that I work on is that there is a very unified, very strong commitment to a very distinctive thing that they want to do,
mm-hmm.
and they don't budge.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say they, I mean like the top brass, like mm-hmm. the production designer,
mm-hmm.
the executive producers, the directors, they are all on board
okay.
with commitment and committed to doing something very specific.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very specific thing in mind.
Mm-hmm.
They may not know the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of like, that's something that they obviously that we figure out as we go,
mm-hmm.
but there is a commitment to doing something that's, I think would scare a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, for example, on the first film, there was a moment where, so I work for a company called ImageWorks, which mm-hmm. is the production company for Sony. So mm-hmm. we produce the films, and mm-hmm. Sony Pictures Animation is kind of like the director's art side.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be sitting in a review, and there'd be like one of the things that we're scared to do sometimes is like to go complete black, no mm-hmm. information, just pure black.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what you need to do for comic books, right? Because there's a lot of lot of parts in comic book where it's just pure black.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh wow, that. I remember like the directors like and the producers being pure black you know, it's like that kind of like commitment to mm-hmm. following through on a style.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very, very easy to be scared and pull back
mm-hmm.
and shave off edges,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
like you're kind of like shaving, oh that's too yeah. And then before you know it mm-hmm. you're back to beige.
Yeah exactly.
You know? Like you ask everyone what the best color is and you end up with beige. So like they kind of like they committed to a color, they mm-hmm. committed to a style, and they held us to it. No, it's like, no, we want that.
That's the
and they were sure about what they wanted. Yeah. And that's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to kind of like for like I'm putting myself in the position of them, right? Because mm-hmm. you're kind of like putting your reputation on the line if it doesn't work out, right? And you're kind of like, you're really sticking your neck out.
Mm.
It'd be much easier to go, yeah, we kind of want a comic book style, but ooh, that's no one's seen that before. Maybe we should just tone it back a little bit.
Happens very often.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, tone it back, just tone it back. And before you know it, you're back to normal looking CG.
And that's what you don't want, because then it doesn't stand out.
Yeah.
And this stands out totally.
It's not innovative anymore.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Yeah.
But you need those people at the top
to be committed. Yeah,
you know?
Like,
because it's no point in people like other artists like myself going, no, it should be really like this extreme. There's no point. Like, we don't have that power.
Yeah.
It's the people at the top that need that kind mm-hmm. of like forced and drive to say, yeah, it's definitely this.
Yeah, and it's also great for the entire team, I believe, right? Because if you have the top that is super committed and they believe in it,
the
people will follow. Kind of,
it's
easier to make a call that is braver, you know, than like with more courageous, right?
Right.
And that's tough.
But it is tough also because like they have to be sure that they're right. And like, you have to be, you have to know that you're right.
Yeah,
right?
And, I'm sure, and I'm sure they are not right all the time, but they pretend to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have to be right enough of the time.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they at least have to pretend it. And then this, yes, I was right. Like,
you know what I mean? I'm sure it was like that on the first film. Because you don't, no one knows, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I was saying actually at the artist interview, someone asked the question, and I can't, and I was saying to them, like, when you're working on the film, you never really know if it's going to be good or not. Like, you never know. Like, you'd think that you would, but the reason you don't know is because we work on the building blocks of the film, right? That's what we do. And when a film comes together, it's the way that those pieces interact as a whole. That's what makes it successful or not. And that's what we can't see when we're making it. Like, we don't have the music, we don't have the soundtrack, we don't have the audio, we don't have the final color grade. We can't see any of that. So it's really hard to know, like, whether it's going to work or not. At the end of the first film, I wasn't sure if it was going to work. Like, I was like, I was really scared. I was like, wow, this is either going to be a huge disaster or it's going to be excellent. And like,
thankfully it was the latter.
Yeah, you never know. So like, you were saying about like the top brass, they were right.
They were.
I wonder how confident they were.
Oh, I can imagine, you know. We had actually a few, you know, at the project Red, we had some situations like that. Like, for example, the scene system in Cyberpunk was super new and super risky. Yeah. And yeah, they were exactly as I said, when you were telling about like taking a step back to make it lesser. And I'm like, no, the system doesn't have to be that first person, let's say.
Yeah.
Let's take a step back and make the regular cinematic language clear.
Yeah.
And like, no, like, you know, we've been very committed to it. But of course there were situations of that, but it's also risky to pursue this direction. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And finally it paid off.
Yeah.
But I remember very well those two or three moments in the production when it was lack of belief. And finally, when we got the very first mock review, they said, "That's gonna stop the game."
That's awesome.
And this is exactly this moment of some kind of a leap of faith.
Yes,
If you want to push the boundary, you have to be a bit crazy.
Yes,
you have to take risks.
I agree. Yeah. You have to take risks.
Yeah,
because if you stay in the safe spot all the time, then you're not really developing or trying new things, because you're always defaulting to the stuff which feels like it's safe.
Exactly.
There's a saying that I go by, that if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got.
Exactly. You are actually standing still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you always do what you've always done, you always get what you always got. So you have to change what you're going to do to get something different.
Well said. So exactly. Well
said. Yeah.
And actually, write that one down.
yeah, exactly. It was one of those things that you can tattoo on your back.
Yeah.
But the thing is also that by doing it, you show others that they can also, you know, and you push the industry.
Right.
Which is great, because you raise the bar and there's more trials and more errors too, but still that's pushing the industry.
Yeah.
And this is great about that you know, that we can learn from each other. That's one of the missions from Promised Land, you know.
Right.
Have people like you coming, and Alyssa Zarate, you know, Albert Shostkevich, all these great guys, you know, exchanging also the experiences, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, who knows? What will come to your mind after Promised Land? You know what I mean. This is good.
One thing we're also kind of talking about, and we see like it's a theme throughout Promised Land, is the fact that a lot of artists are now going back to the fine arts and to their fine art background, and you also have a background in that. But also on the other hand, we have this ever evolving technology and the new possibilities in terms of new tools, and how they influence our workflow, how we work on projects, how we do our projects. So how do you see it in terms of like fine art and its influence, or actually artists going back to fine arts and sticking to that?
So I think what you're referring to is there's a moment that I'm labeling, and I think I've heard one other guy say it as well, so it's not mine. I shouldn't say it's mine. It's a return to the real.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that people are going back to traditional, because AI is like, all of a sudden AI is coming along and making digital kind of like cheap in a way, right?
Cookie cutter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. in some ways, you okay, I've got a slightly different take on this.
Okay.
That maybe not, I haven't heard anyone express before, mm-hmm. right? And my take on it is that if AI can basically take all the art that's happened before this moment and create new art based on that, what that's going to do is it's going to create opportunities to find new visual expression, mm-hmm. new avenues of visual expression that haven't been seen before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a cool opportunity for artists to explore,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if AI is going to kind of like come along and kind of like basically steal all the art that has already happened,
mm-hmm.
then humans with their like that, humans can come along and find completely new avenues for expression.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the positive spin of mm-hmm. like what mm-hmm. could happen.
Yeah.
I fundamentally think that there's a massive ethical issue with AI though.
Oh, of course.
Right? Which is obvious. But I think that ethical issue applies to AI in general. Because mm-hmm. basically what's happened is that we've got these companies that have come along and taken global knowledge, whether it's artistic knowledge or knowledge in mm-hmm. all fields, and they've almost like laundered it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yeah. repackaged it
yeah.
and said, hey, here's all this knowledge. Now you pay us the money for this access to this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I think there has to be some sort of government intervention
yeah.
with this because it's yeah. not, I don't see that as being fair that mm-hmm. a company can't come along and launder global knowledge like that and repackage it to us.
Yeah.
Even though it was ours to begin with.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well said.
Totally agree. But actually, you said something very interesting. I haven't think about that. Like, you know, that this positive spin right. that happens, that, you know, we had already a few chats with other speakers. And as Bujav mentioned, that people tend to come back to the fine art. Like, for example, I don't know if you had the chance to talk to Greg Rutkowski,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And actually, like, this situation kind of motivated him, inspired
yeah.
him
yeah. Yeah.
to get back to the roots.
Yeah.
And to be very honest, I knew Greg, and I really respect his art.
You're also fanboying a little bit.
I'm a huge fanboy because I love Mateiko and like these huge pieces
yeah,
that are epic, yeah. you know, yeah, the yeah. moments,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I was smashed by his Instagram exactly when he realized that this is the moment for me to get back to the fine art. And he started dealing with these huge canvases mm-hmm. that are like very Mateiko mm-hmm. woods oriented, mm-hmm. and that's also that's the outcome of the like, and this is like a part of this positive spin you so I always try to look at the bright side
yeah.
And I absolutely don't believe that the AI will destroy everything but this is great. And I'm actually wondering, and maybe you have an idea, if you think that this positive spin will have also an influence on the film and animation generally industry. Because look at that. After Winnie the Pooh, for example, right? Disney closed all the 2D department. I think Winnie the Pooh, and there was this the Princess and the Frog. And they kind of closed this. And legends like, you know, James Baxter, Andreas Deja, you know, Sergio Pablos, those legends from Disney, they left kind of. Of course, they found their own unique way of dealing with art, which is great. Like, as far as I know, James Baxter is the head of animation at Netflix right now. But still, you know, they closed the top department there.
Right.
But 2Ds in games right now, and you know, right. like, what do you think? Like, how this situation can impact the animation industry?
I think we're all still trying to figure out where mm-hmm. it belongs and if it belongs anywhere. AI as it exists right now is this whole text to image thing
mm-hmm,
yeah. is just obviously not going to work for yeah. any kind of production,
for
right?
Because sure.
you can't change it. You know, there's no way of controlling it, right? I think there might be an opportunity to create our own models in-house mm-hmm. and train on our own data mm-hmm. for a very specific purpose mm-hmm. within our pipeline. Mm-hmm. So it's very tailored to address one particular issue
yeah.
that is very kind of like... it's hard to find the rules for it. Mm-hmm. It's more about kind of like... I see maybe there's a chance there. But mm-hmm. it's this whole thing about AI with the text-to-image thing, I find it uncanny. Mm-hmm. You know the uncanny yeah, yeah. valley thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
It's
yeah.
like, to me, it's uncanny valley art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's yeah. kind of has all the surface-level sheen of art, mm-hmm. but it has none of the soul.
Yeah.
That's true. No intention. And
there's no background there.
Yeah.
No.
And yeah. all the ethical issues aside, mm-hmm. like just for now... purely from an artistic standpoint, as an artist looking at art, mm-hmm. it kind of makes me nauseous.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, like yeah, I kind yeah. of, there's something unsettling about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of like looking at, you know, those early days, Final Fantasy, when they're trying to do photoreal humans mm-hmm. and you're like, oh yeah, it's not to kind of throw any shade on Final yeah. Fantasy. I mean, those guys, they were doing really groundbreaking stuff at that time, but it just goes to show how difficult the problem is.
Yeah.
And the problem is much harder than just kind of like even for a neural network, like that kind of has a really good pattern recognition thing. There's something about things that are made by humans that are very special. And I think part of the things that what makes human art special is that when you create artwork that's created by a human, you go through steps. You make decisions. You start with a sketch. You maybe color that sketch, you make yeah. compositional changes, and all those steps along the way to your finished piece mm-hmm. come from that human being's personal choices. Mm-hmm. And all of those choices are baked into the final product.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see them all. It's intentional. You can see all those choices.
Yeah.
Like the way they painted, yeah. the choices they made, and that is visible.
Yeah.
It's a spirit
yeah, yeah.
that's visible in the image.
Yeah.
AI has no chance of competing with that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Even you know, looking at the kind of real images, like real pictures of, let's say, I don't know, AI pretending to, like, or creating an image that represents riots on streets.
Right.
You see, there's no riots on streets. Yeah. People do not behave like that.
Right.
Or
right.
They
right,
don't.
Right, right.
They don't have the micro expression. It's not absolutely matching the pose.
It's not right. there.
You know, yeah. like you. It's like you know. I like it's like comparing the two pictures of I'm gonna take a picture, right? Smile and you smile and I look at the smile versus a documentary picture of person smiling.
Right.
And
right.
you have a smile that is real because whenever we smile very like intentionally, like yeah, I'm gonna do smile right now. We do not even trigger the same amount of muscles in our face
yeah.
while smiling from the heart.
Right.
Yeah. That, like, you know, yes. those two smiles are absolutely because different muscles, you know, are actually incorporated into the smile that has intention, like very like, and then when the subconscious level is even triggered.
Right, right.
So,
right.
so and AI doesn't know that. And you know. Yeah.
And you need an artist that understands what it means to be a human
exactly.
to put that in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I with the whole AI thing, I've heard a lot of people describing our moment in AI as a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everyone is jumping on board. Like, this is yeah. kind of like, hey, it's going to fix everything. It's going to be amazing. I'm kind of like, I don't know if it's really going to be... I think right now the big thing with AI is that they think by scaling these large mm-hmm. language models, by making more and more training data, by making more and more, like, that's going to be the solution to get them there, mm-hmm. to kind of general intelligence. But if, we'll see if that kind of like works, even if we do get to that point in AI where we get these general intelligence large language models, I still... have very big reservations about whether it'll ever get to a point where it would replace real human creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Because it can only copy based on what it's seen, And being human beings are much, much more inventive than that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, it's kind of something that during the festival, Bjorn Hurry mentioned is that it was very graphic in this case. So if AI eats something, then the thing that's going to come out of it is something that it's going to eat again.
Right,
and
right.
Like, yes, you know, yes. Digest it out and in and out and in and out, where it's lacking the human agency and the creativity and the intentionality, like we talked about. So like all these things are going to get lost somewhere. So there always will be space for, you know, actually thinking about the process, like you said, starting from sketch, going to final, so adjusting things on the go. It's very important. Like, you need these steps, and you also need to play with the whole thing.
AI centipede.
Yeah. Like the snake eating itself, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I mean, there is like they have done studies where they've shown that if you train AI on AI, it just ends up with garbage. It ends up with gibberish.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the big areas that they're worried about, like, right now, because there's so much now stuff now on the internet that's generated by AI, and that's terrible for training.
Yeah.
Because they need human data. They don't want to train it on itself. Yeah. It's like, that's a hilarious problem, right? It's like, you kind of like polluted the environment, and now you're complaining that the environment's too polluted.
That's super interesting, right?
Well said. Well said. I want to ask, like, there's a question that we ask everyone here is, like, what inspires you? Apart from like moving now away from like the old AI discussion stuff, like on your day to day, like where do you get inspiration?
Dude, like, I love photography. Like, I'm really big into photography.
Nice.
Like, I spend a lot of time doing photography. I talking about that return to the real moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when remember that moment when Midjourney came out and it just started to get good?
Yeah.
I went through a thing. Mm-hmm. I went through a thing in myself where I was just like, oh shit, I see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
I started drawing.
Okay.
I started doing these big charcoal drawings.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm doing big charcoal drawings. Talk about like positive.
Awesome.
Like,
those are cool.
That's nice.
Cool. Yeah, because that was like what I was doing back in university. And it was just like, I feel like I'm reconnecting with that side of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I'm doing a lot of photography. I collect art books, particularly photography books as well. So I just like reading and consuming everything art related.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a huge Pinterest thing, and I just like art in general. I love image making. That's my thing. I'm not particularly kind of like interested in one style of art.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know art from a kind of bird's eye perspective about image making. What is image making? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What is a good photograph? Why is that photograph work, and why does this one not? Because with photography, the really interesting thing about photography, right, is that you can look at a photograph and you instantly know what it works, but you don't know why.
Mm-hmm,
like, it's like that. There's something about that speaks to me on a deep level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what it is. And for me, it comes back to that thing of, like, you know, David Lynch, he talks about the visual language as being its own language.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond words.
Oh, yeah.
It's beyond kind of like when you try and translate the language of visuals into words, it loses something.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something inherently inside of visuals that can't be expressed in words. And I just love kind of like playing around with that whole thing and trying to figure out what that is and creating images. So I've got very varied like tastes in art. Like it brought it across the whole spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like I want to make a photography book that's also like uses like natural media, like, so painting over like photos and
that's cool.
Awesome.
Like Arnulf Rayner and like a lot of like German artists, I just love art in general.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, very broad taste.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. I need one more question.
Yeah.
Because you said about that you consume books and art. Is there any book that you would recommend?
Oh shoot. What kind of stuff?
One of your favorite books of all time.
What kind of art?
Whatever art, like, I don't know, it's not about the photography, about the visual language, maybe. As you said,
I've got a really good book that I read recently. Have you read The Creative Act by Rick Rubin?
Yes.
Yes.
That's it. Excellent. That's
all three of us read it. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
That was great.
Super holistic approach. Open-minded.
Very spiritual.
Very spiritual.
I was surprised. Going into that book, I thought reading a book about creativity and spirituality, I'd be like, that's not for me.
Yeah.
I have the same
thing.
But
when I read it, I was like, oh my God, that's how I think about art.
Yeah.
Like,
there's so many eye-openers there. And so many things that you associate how you consume and look at art and how you talk about the creative process itself is just incredible. But he names those things, which is very hard because we always talk about creativity as something that comes from within.
Yeah.
But we hardly ever like name where does it really come from or how we digest things. And he can pinpoint those things, which is incredible. Yeah. But it comes with the experience that he's had in the industry, which is just amazing.
Yeah. And I love it how it's really published, how it's edited.
Yes.
Because it's not like, you know, kind of quantity, kind of over quality. It's very quality. Like every word counts there.
Yeah, I met the writer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He worked in collaboration with Rick Rubin. I did this talk actually at the Motion Picture Academy in Los Angeles. And there was a guy in the audience that I mentioned the book Creative Act because I just read it and I was like, this is great if you ever want to read about creativity. And a guy came up to me and said, hey, do you want to meet the author, Neil Strauss? Neil Strauss. Yeah. And he's like, do you want to meet this author? And I was like, oh, holy cow, I would love to. So he came to the studio with his kid and I showed him around and showed him all the Spider-Verse stuff.
That's awesome.
Really great guy. Cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad we asked him.
Yeah. Oh, we need to go to that studio, see all the Spider-Verse stuff. Sebastian.
Oh, please. If you're ever in LA, come visit.
Oh, yeah.
We need to do that.
100%.
Yeah. Totally need to do that.
If you're ever in LA, come visit.
Geek out.
Open invitation. Open invitation.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll hold you to it.
No, please do. Please do. I love showing people.
That's awesome, man. Expect an email from me.
Okay.
Thank you, Pavel.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for watching, and we hope that you did enjoy this episode as much as we did.
It was an amazing one. And as always, don't forget to comment, like, subscribe, all that jazz. Let us know what you're thinking about the episodes. And as always, let's stay in touch, and we'll see you in the next one.